This is the one with celestial creepy crawlies.
Ballistic bauble bombs.
A TARDIS car chase.
Santa sex dolls.
The world's shittiest groom.
And something about the bride.
It's called The Runaway Bride.
Here we go!
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Daleks, Cybers, and Dude, wow.
Ben and Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha, and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than Who back when? Who Back When.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast.
Or Doc Past.
It gets you every time, doesn't it? That makes you laugh every time.
Such a good line.
Anyway, this episode is N028, The Runaway Bride.
Indeed it is.
To my left, I have the unsilenceable...
Ponkin. Hello.
And to my right, I have...
Nicol Lely, how you doing?
Yeah, he's too good for adjectives. I'm just going to let him speak for himself. So, yes, Christmas special episode time.
Yes, that is true.
Timely as well, since...
Tis
the season, because, well, it is here while we're recording it. While you're listening to it, we have no control over that. It could be March.
No, that's how podcasts work. First impressions. Like it, dislike it, let's spoil that. We've lost Rose, we've gained Donna for one episode.
But then I think that this is a slightly different track. I know it's canon, but I feel like the Christmas episodes have a different... They're conceptually different for me.
We've said this on the show before.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I completely agree, but...
Yeah, I find they're a gimme, and they're a different beast, because obviously they're longer, and they're not part
Tennant
of an arc.
Started on a Christmas ep.
Yes, of course. Of course he did. But I'm fine with it. I think it was a relatively... It's not entirely memorable, though, for me. Even watching it back, I was like, oh yeah, shit, this happened.
Druid?
Yeah. I'm a Nick in that I spent the first 28 minutes thinking I hadn't seen the episode before. And then realising that actually I had, and I enjoyed it back in the day, but it was just completely memory wiped because it wasn't that memorable.
Interesting. I definitely remembered having seen this. I couldn't remember very much about the plot. I remember the star, like the Christmas star, basically, and I remember there being a spider lady. But, oh God, fucking hell. And obviously I remember Donna Noble, and for me, the mission of watching this episode was to see, was I or was I not right about Donna Noble?
Well, don't spoil that. You have to listen on to find out, dear listeners.
Oh. Okay, with that in mind then, should we jump into a bite-sized chunk of Who?
Let's do just that. Bite-sized chunk
of Who. This time, the Doctor doesn't materialise anywhere special. Instead, as we saw at the end of Doomsday, someone materialises in the TARDIS.
Meet Donna Noble, who's just been swept off her feet, literally by Hugh, on particles, and landed in the time machine.
Now the race is on to get her back to the altar, whilst robo-Santas and a spider lady from space get in the way.
B-Scow over, you are welcome.
That's weirdly Christmassy, isn't it? Okay, so where did we start? We started with Donna Noble in the TARDIS having materialised...
No, we don't start there.
Oh, we don't start there.
We start in space and we shoot down towards the Earth.
Yes.
And in through the roof of the church where she's about to get married.
Oh, of course. The backstory of the end of the last story. Okay.
And what happens?
She's going to get married to...
Some dude.
Yeah, some dude. People in the congregation look variously thrilled or snarky about the prospect.
Can I say that of this congregation, groom included, is it the most overacted wedding you've ever seen? Like, it's just like, okay, so you're the jealous one. Act jealous. Put jealousy on your face. And then you're the corny groom, you know, and you're...
It's full of people who are aspiring B-list actors.
Yeah.
Who have got a cameo, like just a walk-on part, and everyone wants a backstory.
They're getting their whole portfolio out in one, like, 5 seconds.
That's why you see one dude with a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
I don't know. It sets up a rich seam of farce that runs through the episode.
Yeah.
Because then they can call back to that, what now, in retrospect, is a ridiculously overacted scene.
Sure. But, all right, I already hate this episode at this point. Do you not already have something that you want to just argue? Okay, she basically gets beamed out of the church.
Right.
Like, all of a sudden she starts glowing,
yeah.
And all these particle thingies, like, she beams out through the ceiling.
Yep.
And people immediately start going like, oh, where did she go? Oh no, she left the groom at the altar. Is she at her mum's place? Is she over there at her friend's? She just got beamed through the ceiling of this goddamn building.
So, I mean, one thing that's hard to reconcile here for me, because they try to rationalise. I get that as an impulse. If you've seen something crazy you don't really understand, you try to rationalise it into something that you're experiencing. Yeah, her mum says, it's one of her silly tricks at some point, you know, this later.
How elaborate are her tricks?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, is this part of her personality usually? Is she like big into the...
Magic scene?
Yeah, she's like a David Copperfield motherfucker. What's happening?
I agree in that I kept expecting her to break out a deck of cards or at least make some allusion to a previous career as a children's party magician.
Turning into particles and flying into space. That's classic Donna.
That would have made so much more sense if she, at some point in her younger life, she'd had like a job as a magician's assistant or something
exactly.
Shit like that. That would have grounded her out a little bit. Yeah. Okay, fair
enough. Dice, home slice.
That's nice. Oh, okay. Well, she's been through and these people are quite clearly dense.
Yeah. We also, we don't really meet, but we see a girl in the congregation who's like her BFF, but clearly her arch nemesis as far as romance is concerned. Like her...
Neris.
Neris, that's her name. Yeah, exactly.
Nerisis.
Yes.
Okay, so now she's in the TARDIS.
And she's acting out the same scene we just saw before the end credits of the last episode, but slightly differently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, to me, it was the difference between an exclamation point and a question mark.
Mm.
Because before, it was like, what the hell is this place? And this time, it was, what the hell is this place? And Doctor's like, what? Instead of, what?
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's so good.
Those were just sound bites.
Why is that so good? Why could you do David Tennant saying, what, quickly, well? It's very annoying, by the way he does that. The entirety of this episode, this Doctor, David Tennant's Doctor, is constantly saying shit is impossible. Constantly. But that's impossible. These particles are impossible. You're impossible. It's like,
oh, except for this one thing that I actually knew about all along and that we thought didn't exist anymore, but clearly is reproducible by mere mortals, like regular humans on Earth.
Or he's like, I understand everything, but I don't understand this. It's like, just admit your knowledge is limited, you egomaniac. For fuck's sake.
Absolutely. You were all gone, weren't you? Kind of like me, but I'm here, so it could happen, couldn't it? Fuck about. Yeah, that's annoying.
So yeah, we embark on an extremely long scene between Tennant and Tate.
In which she gets progressively more annoying to me. Now, I don't know. I need to ask you a question.
Mm.
Are you guys familiar with Catherine Tate's body of work as a comedian?
Yes. Comedian, yes.
Because what I found out from one of our mutual acquaintances, a former colleague of ours from uni, Maura, she mentioned on Twitter that this episode is Donna Noble basically just being Catherine Tate. And then going forward, Donna Noble is Donna Noble. She's her own character and very possibly very different and much more likable. Oh, but here she's very much Catherine Tate.
No, I don't
I've
know.
Never seen
I
Catherine
don't,
Tate.
I wouldn't agree. Because Catherine Tate was, she was a character comedian. She had a sketch show and they had multiple characters. She had one or two famous characters, as it were, but I wouldn't
one
say,
of which was a chav.
Which I think this might be, I think Maura might have been thrown
That's
off
one
there.
One of my
by
notes
the,
as well, what is with the Doctor and chav?
I think she's thrown off possibly by basically being the same accent, but I don't think it's the same character.
No, it's not as extreme at all.
Okay.
I just think it's a chavvy accent. That's it.
Oh, she's super chavvy. That's so fair. What is with the Doctor and Chavs?
Well, he hangs around London / Cardiff, doesn't he?
Yeah, but there are plenty of people in London who aren't Chavs.
Oh, yeah, I think it's probably that whole finding something in, you know, council estates, that sort of thing, where people might feel anonymous in a big block of flats, you know, it's plucked from obscurity and taken...
She's from Chiswick in this episode.
She's getting married in Chiswick.
Though, don't they also go back to Chiswick at the end to hang out with her folks?
Oh, maybe. Chiswick ain't a place. It's not a council flat.
No, rather nice part of town.
Yeah.
Okay, well, regardless, she gets more and more annoying to me in this scene. It's all the same. It's all overacting. It's all just like, oh, get me out of here. You kidnapped me. I don't believe any... Shut up.
Although, I quite
don't
like...
Be so loud.
I mean, I do like the idea that she's losing her damn mind because she wants... I mean, because it is... A lot of sort of companions and stuff in the middle, they're just over and then really happy. It's like, wouldn't you be terrified, at least initially, and maybe angry? Terrified and angry, and I'm fine with that.
But do you feel that she does angry well?
She does angry in a way that we haven't had yet. Like, companions hitherto have just been, or at least in New Who, have been love-struck puppies, and it's quite nice to see shouty.
Sure, but we have had angry characters on the show.
Yeah, but angry companion.
Yeah, but like, that shouldn't be different, right? Like, someone who's angry is going to be angry regardless of their role in the episode.
No, I don't think so. I think that their proximity to the Doctor, like, what we're seeing here is a different thing. It's someone that isn't, like,
No, but you could also argue that she's not quite a companion at this point.
Not yet, but I think we're being up to that. Or at least they're tied in a mutual goal rather than adversarial or,
sure.
or like, bit part. Yeah, I don't know. I like it. I kind of get what you mean with the overacting and stuff, but it makes a nice departure from what we literally just had, which was the most saccharine episode of lovey-dovey feelings. It's nice to get just, I don't give a fuck about you, get put back to my officer.
Yeah, the polar opposite.
Yeah.
And also, she has just been plucked from the Isle. You know, women, some men as well, dream about marriage, they dream about that day, and she's going to be the star of the show for a whole day,
mm-hmm.
and then she ends up in space. And so she already...
Oh, I completely understand the motivation behind the anger, I just don't understand the execution of the anger. It's like she left her good acting in the church.
Well, no, I don't know. Like I said, I think it's probably a conscious choice to make it the opposite of Rose in the last scene. You know?
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think perhaps it might be undercut, and I might bring this up again, by the music. Because you can't really separate her acting from the music, which is just overbearing in this scene. And for most of the time, Donna and the Doctor are a duo on screen. It's like, this is really jaunty. This is where you laugh. And it just comes on like that.
Absolutely. Yes. The overture is ridiculous.
That's super interesting. I didn't really make a note of the music in that sense.
And, you know, in a way that... Well, no, they did a little bit for Rose, actually, thinking about it. I'm not sure that
she had her own theme.
Particularly. Yeah.
Yeah, and so does Pond, and so does Clara.
Yeah.
But here, the music was just wall-to-wall. I mean, Murray Gold had a fit or something. Just went bananas.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happens next?
They set off for Chiswick. Oh, no, she discovers it's a spaceship.
Yeah. All right, yeah, well, fine.
That was whatever. And yeah, then they sod off to Chiswick. But they don't end up in Chiswick. They end up slightly further.
Regent Street.
Yeah. It's just not that hard to get to. That's right.
Which we can't get a taxi because people think that she's either drunk
or a man.
Yeah, in drag. Which I really like.
I've also got to tell you, those of you that haven't been to London, if you're a little bit drunk or feel like cross-dressing, you can still get a fucking cab.
Yeah.
We're not going to... I don't understand where that comes from. If you're cross-dressing, you're perfectly entitled to a cab.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, it is London. At any given moment, there is probably someone cross-dressing in a cab.
Presumably, there's all sorts of
life. There are tons of people in London. Statistically speaking, it's bound to happen.
Also, been super drunk in a cab. It's fine.
Yeah, not a problem whatsoever.
But there are also probably two tossers driving by in a car going to go, "Oi!" or whatever they see.
Possibly.
Possibly.
Okay, well, regardless, this also sets us up for a joke later on in the episode in which the reason she can't get a cab or can't go anywhere in a cab when she finally gets one is she doesn't have any pockets in which to put money. So she has no pockets. That's going to be nicely bookended towards the end. Yeah. And actually, one of the few things that I kind of like about this episode, that one line later on. Carry on.
Wow.
So David Tennant goes to try and get some money.
Yeah.
Well, he's already sonicked something by this point.
Yeah.
He's already sonicked the phone box.
Oh, yeah. And now
so
he's...
So the 10p.
Now he's trying to sonic some cash out of the wall.
Yep.
So that's two sonics and we're like 8 minutes in.
And then he notices what coming towards him?
The Santa robots. The robot forms. Yet again dressed as Santa, a slightly different Santa mask to the first time. Which was his first episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
the Christmas Invasion.
Yeah. They were relatively terrifying.
Yeah.
Actually. And I love the it's like, do you know what looks like guns?
French horn.
Yeah. Brass, let's just do brass instruments and make them look like guns. Yeah, that's funny. And then, yeah, Donna is whisked away. What I don't understand is, so she stopped the cab.
Yeah.
And then jumps in.
There's a dude dressed as Santa. There's a robot dressed as Santa driving the cab.
She still doesn't have any money.
No. She got a tenner from someone on the street.
Oh, right.
Yeah, she begged it.
The Doctor, in order to... I think he already gets a wad of cash, right? He basically robs a bank. Then in order to fool the roboforms, sonics the cash machine so that it's just spitting out money and lots of people run there to, like, greedily pick up wads of cash themselves.
That explains the current global financial crisis.
There is that, but also, like, countless, just the collateral damage, potential collateral damage that could have occurred.
That's what I thought, because they're pointing their brass instrument guns at him.
Yeah.
And then he thought, do you know what I'll do is I'll create a human shield wave of people.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Why would they not open fire?
Yeah, in Christmas Invasion, they're opening fire in a Christmas market, right? And they're just shooting people left, right, and centre.
Yeah, and 10 minutes from now, they're just bombing the shit out of the reception.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So why wouldn't they?
I'm super underwhelmed by the guns.
By the trombones, you mean?
Well, the trombones and then latterly, the guns. They just got, like, guns. Like, terrestrial guns.
Yeah, they shoot bullets as opposed to lasers.
Or something cool from your...
The Torchwood Warehouse.
Your spider planet in deep space. Guns. I don't know. Yeah. Like, webs.
Web slingers.
Yeah, some shit. I don't know.
Cool. Yes, agreed.
All annoying. Anyway, Karen.
So she's now in the taxi.
Hurtling towards Chizik, and then they miss the turning for Chizik. Like there's one.
Oh no, the Chizik Junction!
The Chizik flyover. Yeah. Anyway, yep, so she knows she's being kidnapped, and then she starts tugging at the hat of the... and reveals the...
the actual robot face.
Yes, the robo-slave thing.
Robo-form.
And then, oh, this is where the TARDIS comes racing after her.
Yeah, this is the car chase.
Yep, the Doc jump-starts it with a hammer, for some reason.
A mallet.
Does he use... there's something... something's wrong with the TARDIS, right?
Yes.
It's got indigestion.
Really? Is that the line?
Yeah, he's saying, like, oh, you're digesting something.
Oh.
I guess it's human particles.
Yeah. There is a bit when they actually land, we didn't mention the whole, like, oh, it's bigger on the inside. Yeah. Donna Noble has that moment here. But
I think she acts that well. Just going to put that in there.
Yeah. Okay, you know what? Yeah, and that's what she said. But also, yes, agreed. That was a good one. And also very good because... actually, I was going to say it's really good because she doesn't say the line. He has to step in. She's just dumbfounded and he has to step in and go, yeah, it's bigger on the inside. But it's very, very similar to Rose's first experience of it. When Rose runs into the TARDIS, looks at it, runs immediately back out and, like, just circles the TARDIS outside. Very, very similar setup.
Mm.
But in that scene, Tennant goes like, oh, I can't really maneuver the TARDIS anymore, and he gets some other thing and plugs it in. And I thought, I'm not sure, but I thought that was the gadget that he stole from the Raxacorico Falabatorian whatever in Cardiff, in Boomtown.
Oh, that looked like a little, like a surfboard thing. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I thought it was the same, maybe I'm wrong.
Back to Russell in his pants.
Possibly.
Everything's coming together, including
so much
Russell.
So much jam. Jam and red string.
Okay, the TARDIS comes tearing down what would presumably might be the M4 at this point.
Yeah, or the Chizik approach.
And of all the drivers, only two kids in the backseat of one car notice this. Yeah. No one else notices a thing.
No, which fills me with dread for driving to work. Like, is no one noticing anything right now? Yeah. And then what happens?
We get, like, a reenactment of that scene from Speed, because he pulls up next to her, he sonics the robot, just like Keanu did in Speed, and then... and then she has to jump from the taxi into the thing.
Mm.
Which, by the way, is it just me, or does this mean that there is now a taxi hurtling at, I don't know how many miles an hour...
50.
...without a driver?
Yeah.
At least 50. I mean, he was speeding
it's
like crazy.
It's got to be over 50.
Yeah. With no driver, because he's knocked out the robot, and there's lots of traffic. In fact, we know there's a car with two kids in it.
Directly ahead.
Directly ahead, exactly. That's now, like, about 50 people died right there.
The Doctor in this episode really does not give a fuck about collateral damage.
Or human feelings in general.
Pile it on. He is dead inside.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that I like the bit where she says, I'm in my wedding dress! And he goes, yes, you look lovely! Just jump!
Yeah, that's very good.
That is actually really good.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, and we also get, possibly not the first callback, but a callback to the Doctor beginning his state of grieving for Rose.
Did she
trust you as well? And within the scene's barreling along at 51 miles an hour, and then suddenly it stops dead, and he has to pull out his moody face.
Yeah.
The mood completely changes, and I actually thought that was quite effective.
She's so alive.
Also, I fully liked the idea that Donna Noble was questioning, like, you could be a psychopathic murderer. No one ever comes up with that as an idea. It's like, I'm being kidnapped, be what might be an intergalactic serial killer. That's essentially the intimation there.
Yeah, an intergalactic serial poonhound.
But even so, wouldn't the Doctor and the TARDIS be the lesser of two evils? Like, worst case scenario, she's going to survive if she jumps into the TARDIS.
Or she could die falling onto the road, but, you know...
Yeah, but if she stays in the car, she's in the backseat of a cab, she can't reach anything, she can't reach the brakes or anything, and the car is just speeding along the highway, piloted by literally no one.
Yeah, but I do like the, like I said immediately, that she at least questions his motives.
Yeah. What are you doing? No, that's a very good point.
And then the Rose thing comes out.
And then the kids punch the air in triumph. Woo! Which made me dead inside, like really? The Doctor. Yeah.
Well, you know what? You can rest assured that at least about 10 seconds later, those kids were dead. So, don't worry about it.
Fair enough. They had one last moment of misplaced happiness.
Yeah. And off they go to the wedding reception now.
Well, they can't have had the wedding reception, could they?
No, they go up to the helipad.
Oh!
They don't go to the reception. They stop off for a break.
Well, yes. Yeah, they do. They stop off for a little chat and a break.
That's true. And he gives her the ring thingy.
The bio damper.
Mm. Bio damper. Very cool. Okay. Well done, whoever wrote this.
To make a bio damper.
So we have a bit more Rose chat that the Doc avoids assiduously. Yeah. And then he scans tape with the Sonic, and it turns out that she's a secretary at H.C. Clements. And he wonders, why would someone working for a random company who's not significant or important wind up in the TARDIS?
Yeah.
It's impossible, I tell you!
Isn't this whole fucking thing that no one's insignificant? Everyone's important for some bullshit.
He does get... Oh, I think I may have made a note of that as well. There is a point where he does his... Tenant of you humans, you're so wonderful and amazing. And it may be here on the rooftop, I'm not sure.
He also
sure.
does a few sorries in this one.
Yeah, he didn't do a so sorry though.
No, but a sorry.
I'm sorry, Donna. Yeah, but that's fine, dude. People can apologize for shit.
Not with that tone of voice.
Yeah,
Soz, my bad. Apologies, any of those.
That's got to be worth a plus 0.1 when you come to rate this episode at the end.
What, the absence of so sorry?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good point.
I'm trying to argue you up as we go along. We also get Donna's backstory about how she met Lance and how he wore her down.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of funny.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. Harmless fun.
Exactly. Those would be the perfect words for it. Kind of funny. But we also get that, no, I'm really not from Mars. That is the running joke that annoyed me the most. Even though there might be a basis for it, I did cringe every time the whole Martian thing was resurrected.
Oh, I kind of liked it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Even, spoiler alert, even Spider Lady calls him a Martian, right?
Spider Lady. Since it's Christmas.
Yeah, it ends up being a misdirect for that character, which is good.
Yeah, exactly. There is part of that backstory that I'm going to have to ask you guys about because I'm not entirely sure what happened there. But we'll deal with it when we get to it.
Okay, so now we head to the reception.
Bing bong.
Which they were never going to have, obviously. Mm. And then it was in full swing, which I, again, thought was very funny.
I've also made a note to share a screenshot on whobackwhen.com. 24 minutes and 30 seconds in, we get the chavviest haircut ever.
Oh, brilliant. I can't wait.
Is it the wrong...
I can show you now, if you like.
Is it the wrong... the wrong facelift? Where your hair is tied back so far.
No, it's a dude in this case, but he's got, like, a weird pattern shaved into the side of his head.
So Neris is dancing with Lance. And they're all having a whale of a time.
And then Donna turns up and it's all her fault.
Yes, until she starts crying.
Yeah.
Which again, I thought was very well acted. I thought that was funny.
That she's faking being sad. Yeah, agreed. I'll say I sort of enjoyed that 2 second slot of Donna Noble. I got a question though.
Mm.
What's the groom called again?
Lance.
Why is Lance so goddamn happy? Because, spoiler alert, his like massive conspiracy, as far as he's aware, has failed. Right?
Yeah.
He's been... Fuck it, everyone's seen this episode. He's been feeding her Huon particles for 6 months.
Yeah.
Agreed to marry her and all that shit so that he can go into space and be like, ooh, wow, cool. Right? The fact that she disappeared from the church means that he has failed... to do so. That 6 months' work was all for naught.
And now he has to answer to the Empress of the Rachnos.
Yeah.
Maybe he's playing the long game. Maybe he's just a very committed double agent and he just thinks he can turn it around. She'll turn up and he'll turn it around.
Maybe he can finagle Neris in the meantime.
Finagle?
Maybe he can put a couple of fingers in there at minimum. Anyway.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yes, finagle is an anagram of finger waggle.
So they're all happy families again, even though they just spunked a load of money on an unnecessary wedding.
Yeah.
That they're going to have to repeat in July.
Yeah. And then what happens? Then the doctor goes investigating.
Yeah, he uses WAP. WAP technology. Oh,
that is actually so good. You know what I couldn't really understand with all of that, really. Yeah, they used WAP technology, but then when he sonics it, quite clearly web pages show up. Like, it flicks through a whole bunch of content, and some of them look like web pages.
Really? I think they were, like, regular WAP
pages. Maybe they were, but they just flicked through so many. And I was just like... And then I was trying to remember, did we have smartphones? No, we didn't. We didn't have smartphones at that
They were feature phones.
Yeah.
Is that what they were called? I think they were called feature phones.
I don't know.
Possibly.
Well, regardless.
Yeah.
So that's Sonic use number 3.
Yeah.
I'm keeping a count.
Oh, wow. The Sonic Count.
Yeah.
Okay.
The kids won't know. That reference will be completely lost on them. WAP.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so back in the day, before Wi-Fi.
When the internet was all written on scrolls.
We essentially had mobile teletext.
Yes, exactly.
Which, again, you won't understand.
Which we've seen on Doctor Who before, though. Rose used WAP technology to gain information about Parallel Peace when they went to the Parallel Universe in Age of Steel, whatever, Rise of the Cybermen.
Yeah. Later on, I think Saxon uses WAP.
Oh, obviously. We get a reference to Saxon here as well, by the
way. Yes, we do.
Yeah, coming up. Yeah. Anyway, okay. So he uses WAP technology now, anyway, to look up the company where Lance and Donna work.
Yep.
And he finds what?
That their sole proprietor is Torchwood.
Which doesn't seem at all clandestine, like, at all, if there are records of you purchasing. Like, surely, as a super secret, like, organisation, wouldn't you make, like, a proxy company somewhere?
Yeah, make an anagram out of your name.
Yeah. If Doctor Who owns this company.
Yeah.
Even the BBC production team chose anagrams for their reels of tape.
Yeah, just create a whole new company somewhere in Switzerland called Rock Cod How. And then...
Rock Cod How?
Rot Cod How. And then buy whatever the fuck you feel like.
Yeah, and no one's going to know.
People have been embezzling shit for years under this strategy.
Not in this case. They even have, like...
They've got paperwork.
They've got paperwork and logotypes on, like, doors that anyone can access. Anyway, yes, so now we know Torchwood owns this key company, this lock company. At which point... Wait, hang on. Somehow he needs to realise that they're Huon particles.
Well, he talks to the wedding photographer and goes back
through the wedding. Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, you're right.
They look like Huon particles, but that's impossible! Fuck me, mate.
You have video evidence.
If there's anyone in the universe that might be not much of a sceptic, it'd be you, right?
Mm.
Cow Hot Rod.
Cow Hot Rod. That's what we're going to name our podcast reels.
Cow Hot Rod.
Cow Hot Rod.
I like it.
So, ancient pre-biodamping energy.
Right. Mm.
That's unfortunate.
So it wouldn't work, so they had to run after Donna again.
Yeah, exactly. But it's too late. The roboforms have already arrived.
Yeah.
And somehow, they have also planted a Christmas tree with exploding baubles in the reception area.
Well, just in case their other plans had failed.
Makes sense.
Lance is nothing if not thorough.
I don't think Lance knew about that.
Oh, okay.
Do you reckon?
He was running about as if he was dodging them.
Exactly. He almost
Donna,
died
I think,
as well.
Saved him, yeah, at some point. Mm-hmm. Those are very sinister baubles.
Yeah, very.
They're much better than the shitty tree that tried to kill David Tennant.
Oh, the spinning tree thing?
That was bullshit. But
so how many people in the wedding reception do you reckon survived?
How many extras can they afford? 40?
So there are 40 there. Of them, how many died? I mean, there are literal grenades going off. In a relatively small space.
I don't see any blood.
Well, let's say they all made it.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
It's Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
Christmas, as we all know, makes us impervious to thousands. And then we get, I think, a pretty cool use of the Sonic. There's a sound system, and the Doctor basically kills the roboforms by popping his Sonic in the microphone jack.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sonic use number 4.
Yeah. What does that mean for the humans in the room, though? Because he is shooting crazy amounts
of Sonic.
They're
just like, ow.
That's it.
Yeah, they can
ow to a human, but a robot will, like, disintegrate a super strong metal creature.
Humans can put their fingers in their ears. It's proof against almost any strength of sound wave.
Wow.
Also, I'm sure the Sonic directs that to an extent.
How did... No, the speakers directed it, man.
Yeah, they're pointing robot woods.
Okay, fine.
Can I bring up at this point something I had a problem with?
Yeah.
Which is that Santas are approaching all entrances. It is long after 3:30, which is the time it was on the helipad.
Okay.
It is 3 days after the shortest day of the year. The sun would set at 3:55 p.m. I looked this up in 2006 in London.
Oh, God.
And yet it's broad daylight for the entire episode.
Oh, how are we not masturbating right now?
Let this be inscribed on the tablet of goofs.
This is so too far.
But at the same time, it's so impressive, right? I mean, well, I had not thought about that at all. That's amazing.
Let's not be that podcast. There's already 50. the other fucking podcast doing this bullshit. Let's just point out the logical inconsistency.
Did you notice,
and
by
not
the way,
the time of the fucking day?
Did you not see, by the way, that when we zoomed into Chiswick from space, we saw a cumulus cloud over the south? Clearly, I looked this up, was not there at the time.
Russell C. Davies, do your research.
Oh my god.
Wow. Well done, sir. We are not worthy.
Okay, please continue.
That was awesome. Okay, so the Doctor, Donna, and Lance abandoned their friends and family in the exploded... Sorry.
It's not quite that callous. I mean, there is a bit of humanity shown by Donna. At this point, she says, well, if you're a doctor, fucking do some doctoring and help them. Oh, no, my family. There's
but
a contrast.
She's still fairly quick to run off.
Well, no, I can go there. Like, she's going to hopefully do some investigating, whereas the Doctor doesn't actually address any of her... Like, shouldn't you help people? No, I'm good.
Yeah, big picture.
All right, okay. Yeah, and that's a theme that sort of comes to fruition a bit later as well.
Okay, fine. All right, whatever. They run off now, and they go to the company where they work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, although we also see a claw stroking a screen at this point.
Oh, yes.
Yes, and we see the boy as well, I think. Do we not?
We're not sure about the star, but definitely claw and screen and clever boy or some shit like that.
That's true.
You get a close-up of a red face, some sharpened teeth. Oh, yes, and heading towards the Earth in a star-shaped spaceship.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Which is super Christmassy. I mean, you've all heard the story, right, about the star-shaped spaceship and...
Oh, the giant...
red spider lady.
Yeah, I get it. I understand that's the...
She's red as well.
The basis
red
of Santa,
is,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Santa.
Yeah. I did not make that connection.
Yeah. It's actually...
it's brilliant.
It's an Austrian folktale. Deep space red spider.
I got to say, though, like Nick said, Christmas episodes run on a slightly different track.
Sure.
This is where families sit on Christmas Day with their children, adults, everything. You've got to have the broadest appeal possible. You might have younger kids watching them, perhaps.
Yeah, so they're like even more child-friendly, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm saying this is a villain drawn in great big primary colours, specifically red, and that I thought that there were a lot of things that would work for a younger child audience in this episode that perhaps, you know, the latest Capaldi series, just way over their heads.
Mm. Probably.
At this point, I was thinking, actually, this is a fairly effective kids show, which it no longer is.
Yeah. No, I
think that the last time that we saw Roboform, sorry to cut you off there, but the last Christmas episode that we had, as in the Christmas invasion, that wasn't super child friendly, was it? Like, he gets his hand chopped off, he throws a dude off a spaceship.
I guess it was relatively fantastical in that sort of way. They weren't
They're all fantastical. This is fantastical.
But I'm saying they weren't deep, complicated themes in either of those Christmas episodes. Well, maybe you're right.
Oh, and also, fast forward to him, like, burning all of the Empress's kids.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, super fucked up.
We'll need to
and
revisit
kids were
that.
Watching, like, the same kids who were jacking it to this scene, they're crying themselves to sleep later on because they can't forget the next one.
That's right. All our kids have got ADHD now. They won't have known. Like, they'd have seen something shiny in between.
Yeah, I forgot I'd even seen this episode. Yeah. They'll be fine.
Okay. So what do we find out?
Oh, also, this is the world's biggest lock firm. Like, why do they have a building that's just cavernous? Why is it the size of fucking Canary Wharf? How many people do you employ? How successful is this lock company?
Yeah, they do digital locks or whatever. There was a moment when we get to see the blueprint, the 3D blueprints. Mm. There was a moment when I thought, oh, they're going to do something clever and, like, the building is a lock in itself, or a key, rather, because when you saw all the levels of it, it looked like a key. No dice. Anyway, what we do find out is...
If you're thinking of hiring a graphic designer for your next series, Leon is available.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
He has great ideas.
Please do. I'll turn everything into a lock. Anyway.
He'll lock it down.
So they go to the secret floor. Which
exactly.
This is in no way secret because it's marked up on the elevator.
There's a button for it.
Yeah.
Donna has presumably been in that lift 400 times.
Tell us there's a secret floor. No, not secret. Stop saying things are secret when they're not secret.
I don't know. I like that because, again, this is appealing to the kid in me. This was one of my most persistent fixations as a kid when I would be in a supermarket or a department store and, you know, you go to the shopping levels, but then there's the lower ground. It's like, what the fuck's down there in this most mundane of environments? Why do you need a secret floor? Oh my goodness, it must be an earth-shattering secret held within. And so at this point, I was like, I get it. Let's go down there.
And if I knew who Who started off with a lower ground floor revelation in Rose with the Autons. There you go. Yeah, yeah. Wipe it up, young man.
Sorry, I'll be a minute.
Oh, before they go downstairs, we have one tiny interlocution twixt the Doctor and Donna, in which we finally get the explanation, how did she end up in the TARDIS? And it's the Huon particles react to... There's only a Huon particle in the TARDIS, which we're going to need later on. And those two, they're sort of like magnets. They're drawn to each other, and he has the pencil in a cup metaphor, which... I can't ham-fist this, but the line is 4H sums you up. And anyway, something, something, monic. Double E. Anyway. Anyway.
Yeah, that's never mentioned. Jackie's are mentioned every episode, but Donna's receive no credit.
They should receive two credits.
Can someone explain to me why 4H would sum her up? Is it a particularly soft pencil?
She's a very hard pencil.
Very hard.
Is that what a 4H is?
Yeah, H literally stands for hard. Don't know what B stands for, but B is soft, H is hard.
No.
She is a very formidable pencil.
The normal pencils are just... The HB, are they? I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's the midpoint of the whole continuum of pencils.
Shit, every day's a school day, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it goes up to 9H, 9B. Fuck loads of pencils out there.
What the fuck do you do with a 9H?
How do you know so much about pencils? That's what I want to know.
You, like, vanquish your enemies with 9H? What do? What is 9B? Is that just a noodle?
A 9B is just you dip your hand into a pit of carbon and smear it on the page.
9H is just diamonds.
Yeah, essentially. 9H, you're just scoring the paper.
Okay, cool. Next week on Two Bag Pencils.
So yeah, the Doctor can't surely commandeer this lift and go to the secret floor, can he?
Of course he can.
Because this is...
Sonic number 5.
Wow! They go downstairs, they find some old school Segways. These are the pioneering days of Segways.
These are like the 4Hs of Segways.
Yeah. And they are hilarious. Let me tell you.
Why are they so funny? Why are there 3 minutes of them just fucking laughing?
Falling about or not being able to because of the gyroscopic character of the Segway, but they would have been.
But like, so Lance is just like, what the fuck is up with you guys? And Catherine Tate is, Donna is laughing her ass off. And it doesn't seem clear as to why. I don't...
And then the Doctor joins in.
Well, maybe they're just laughing at the absurdity of the situation. She's wearing her wedding dress.
She literally just saw her parents or her mum.
Almost be killed by grenades?
Yeah.
That just happened. She just left a motorway where a bunch of people just died.
I'm going to say that she's probably going into shock and or hysteria.
Oh, that's what this is.
And the Doctor is just a...
Yeah, but also this episode trades on the idea of selective amnesia.
Oh, that's true. Oh, we have not mentioned that. That's a... Yes, yeah, please. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, because either earlier or later, the Doctor's like, a big cyber invasion happened.
It's like, oh, I was
last
insane.
Week.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I hesitate to be too weighty and grim about this, but obviously the world is awash with terrorism. One of the themes that people have been saying in the aftermath is that this happened a few months ago and everybody started carrying on as normal fairly soon afterwards because we just forget traumatic events and fear because we can't live with it.
Especially if they're not directly affecting us.
Yeah.
If they're somewhere a little bit, you know, and she said, oh, I was in Spain, didn't notice.
Yeah. Okay, this won't work for everyone, but for the majority.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, the Doctor finds a secret door.
That's true, yeah.
And he goes up through the ladder, and he's on top of the Thames Barrier, which is a place Doctor Who hasn't been before, in London, big landmark, and it's still daylight.
Where is the Thames Barrier? Is it over by the Excel?
I was about to say it's in the river.
But it is over by the Excel, isn't it?
Yeah, it's towards the east. It's further east than you would typically go on the tube.
Yeah.
Okay.
Way past the Isle of Dogs. Way past, you wouldn't go. There's no reason to go there.
Yeah. So, how long were they on those segways?
Just laughing their asses off. Just giggling.
Yeah, but those are hardcore segways. They got 80 miles an hour. That's why they're laughing.
Oh, I see.
The wind is blowing their mouths open.
Makes perfect sense. It's actually not even laughter.
Yeah. It's terror.
Okay, so they find this door. The door says Torchwood on it.
Of course it does. Super secret organisation.
No, they're hiding in plain sight. This works perfectly well. They go through and they find a massive, what looks like your run-of-the-mill Bond nuclear reactor scene, set, with
good
lots
set.
Of bubbles in water. Very nice set, yeah, definitely, high budget. Mm. And it turns out, by looking at bubbles in water, the Doctor can see, it's Huon particles. How? Oh, whatever. Let's say that he can. And so now we get the confirmation. Someone's been making huon particles. This is where I start to space out a little bit. Because who's creating this? Is Torchwood making huon particles?
Why did they start? If the Time Lord eradicated them, where did they start?
Yeah, so I'm not entirely sure I understand what they are, really. I mean, why were they eradicated by the Time Lords?
Because they were deadly. That was our only explanation.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
They unravel atomic structure, and they're the Rachnos' power source.
Right. Okay. Why would they be useful now?
To power your hot rod cow.
Yeah.
So is Torchwood making them, or is the Empress getting Lance and whomever on the ground to make them for her?
I think, yeah, and the robot remote controls.
So what has Torchwood got to do? Literally anything.
Exactly. That's my point. Why do we need Torchwood for any of this? And also, if we're just making huon particles, why do we need to feed them into a human over 6 months and then dump that human into a great big hole?
They do say that. They say that they're inert until they come in contact with living matter, so it needs a host.
Oh,
yeah, a catalyst.
Oh, I see.
You should have paid attention.
Damn. I should have paid attention, you're right.
I fell asleep and I knew that.
Okay, so now we go next door and we finally meet the Empress. She beams down.
Via intercom first.
Yeah, initially. And then she beams down, right?
Then she beams down.
There's a massive hole drilled by laser to the core of the Earth.
Sexy.
I feel like the kids so doing geography would understand there were some fundamental issues with that.
Dude, I will have you know that on Doctor Who, we have had people dig their way to the core of the Earth using nothing but their hands and wicker baskets.
And some elbow grease.
Yeah.
It's a good old-fashioned gumption.
In fact, there's the remake of that with Peter Cushing that we reviewed.
Yeah.
Where they actually dig their way by hand to the core of the Earth.
Yeah.
So actually, this is pretty advanced shit, right?
Yeah. So anyway, so they're using the center of the Earth as some sort of incubation.
Something is down there. We don't really know what yet. We're
Donna
gonna find
thinks
out.
It might be dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah.
That was funny. And she already laughed. Dinosaurs! I'm helping. That's very good.
What is wrong with you? How do you not like Donna?
I like that bit. Yeah. I like that. Like, there are occasional scenes where I go, oh, actually, that exchange of words, that really worked. Yes. And then, you know. Really, there are occasional scenes where I do like her. But overall, as a character, she makes me want to throw up in my hand.
I think the lady doth protest too much.
Are you talking about Donna or Leon? Leon. So Lance bugs off, plot point.
Yeah.
And then the crab. I thought she was a crab, but no, obviously she's a spider.
Arachnos.
Mm-hmm. Arachnos, yeah.
Oh. That has just clicked.
I was like, classics degree work.
Now I get why she's not a crustaceanoid.
Out of the film, anyway, sort of.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. Anyway, moving on. She appears, and instantly she's all tongue and head askew and hissing and dribbling and what the fuck?
I don't know. Yeah. So annoying.
Super annoying. Who plays her, by the way? Is that a recognisable actress?
No, there was too much makeup and hissing in for, you know, even
and too many eyes.
Could have been Dame Judi Dench for all I fucking know. No concept.
Super annoying, which I think is kind of weird, by the way, because normally the antagonist is played by someone you'd recognise from something, at least.
Should we IMDb it?
Fine, yeah. I can do it.
Anyway, so she's off on a rant about villainous things, and Lance is going to what seems like, at this point, uncharacteristically brave. Like, what? How are we ever supposed to believe that he was going there to single-handedly take down the 9-foot-tall spider lady?
I didn't see it coming. I thought that all that was going to happen was he was going to
buy it.
Yeah, he was going to hit her with his axe. It was just going to bounce off her carapace and she would eat him, and he would buy it.
I couldn't get on board with that as a line of inquiry, because he was just too buffoon-like to this point. Why would he have this sudden burst of alpha male courage?
To be delicious fodder, I don't know.
Well, if he had actually tried and then survived, then it could have almost been a parallel to the way Mickey was. You know, he was a total coward in the first place, and then out of love, he finds the courage to do something heroic.
I don't know, I didn't know.
But no. Anyway, I found this person. What's her name? Sarah Parrish, who plays the Empress. Oh. She was in Atlantis.
Oh my goodness. I just realised who she is in W1A. That's mental.
I've never heard of W1A.
Oh. She is the exact opposite character she plays in there. Oh, really? She's got range.
If anyone knows W1A, she played Anna Rampton.
What is the opposite of a 12-foot-tall space spider?
Space spider.
she's basically the most emotionally closed-off BBC executive you can possibly imagine. She only has one expression. Well, I suppose she only has one expression in this episode as well, but it's the completely divergent expression.
Well, people who are listening to us right now may have seen Atlantis. That's a fairly popular show. I mean, I think it was cancelled, but yeah, I mean, it was popular up until it was cancelled. She played Pasiphae in that. Oh. In 19 episodes of it. Oh,
okay, but she's supposed to be recognisable. What did she play around the time of this episode? What would people have known her for?
She was in The Holiday. She had a bit part in The Holiday. She played Hannah. That's on our Christmas movie list, by the way, so we'll probably be watching that tomorrow. She was in Miss Marple.
Okay, she's in a lot of TV, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, Cutting It. 25 episodes. Anyway, that's enough for the Sarah Parrish podcast.
Sarah Parrish, you are welcome.
Okay, so turns out douchebag McShitface Lance is... It's a double cross.
He's in cahoots.
Exactly, with the Empress. And did I get this right? I mean... Part of me really wants him to have been boning the Empress as well.
Yes, at some point she says he's a consort.
Exactly.
And he said, well, it's better than a night with... Donna takes a shellacking in
this scene. This scene is terrible. Sad. The scene is actually awful.
Yeah.
Makes you feel bad for her as a theoretical character whom she could have been playing if she hadn't been playing this annoying one instead.
Well, I think that that's the Donna Noble arc, is that she feels worthless because lots of people in her life have always told her so. Like, her mum can be a bit, you know, mean. And people like Lance and whatever. And,
sure.
And then turns out to be the most important person in the universe, which is awesome.
See, I don't really remember what happens to Donna. I remember how she ends the show, like how her run ends.
Yeah.
But I don't remember her backstory at all. This is what I've got.
I thought this was another scene which she acted well. She had a very good hurt face.
Mm. Agreed.
She really had to withstand a lot. I mean, he had a list of her faults.
Yeah. Yeah. So, she. I think he is boning the spider lady.
Awesome. Right?
So
many legs to hold on to. Which ones do you spread?
Also, isn't that a really shitty deal? Like, it's like, oh yeah, the human race is all fucked, but I can show you the world. Like, it's not even a tangible thing. It's like, yeah, I'll take you to space.
Yeah, exactly. He basically wants to be a companion.
Yeah.
I'm surprised the Doctor didn't make a play.
Yeah, he could have.
Suck my ego, please.
Also, I've got a dick.
I did like there's a bit of convention undercutting.
Okay.
Into the latter half of this episode, where the Doctor says, "All right, so what's your plan?" And Lance is just like, "Fuck off! We're doing this shit, whatever."
Yeah, I'm not gonna tell you anything.
So now the robot forms, they're preparing to open fire. We get finally the book ending of whatever they're called again, Huon particles. They're drawn to each other, and the Doctor somehow summons the TARDIS using Huon particles.
Mm-hmm. And?
And they disappear.
No, he uses Huon particles and the Sonic
reverse. I see.
Sonic number 6.
Number 6. Have you been keeping account in every episode, or is this like a one-off?
This just really stood out for me.
Okay. And now that they're back in the TARDIS, they want to find what is actually in the core of the Earth.
Well, the Doctor does, but Donna's sitting there just crying to herself.
Yeah, that's good also. Actually, the companions do tend to get swept up, don't they? And they keep getting on with the narrative, whereas Donna was like, no, man, that's hurtful.
Well, as we'll find out later on, she's also not paying attention at all. Anyway, so they're now going back to the start of the universe. This is sometime post Big Bang, anyway. And there are bits and pieces flying around.
This is the furthest back he's ever been, he says.
Not true, because we've seen the Big Bang in Classic Who, even.
This is the furthest back I've ever been.
Pretty sure that's bullshit.
Do your research, RTD.
In the third episode of Classic Who with William Hartnell, called The Edge of Destruction, often referred to as The Edge of Discretion because of a line flub, he goes back and sees the Big Bang.
Take it up with Tennant, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David, come on the show. Anyway.
Seriously, yeah.
Why Dave, not? Super Tennant.
But regardless, we get not really... I mean, technically, I totally get this is not entirely incorrect, but I think it's a really, really lovely line. Let's have a soundbite so that we have a soundbite. 42 minutes in, he goes, "There's no solar system. Oh, look, there's the sun." So, yeah.
I did like this scene, though, because there was a break in the music.
Oh! Yeah,
there's a bit of, you know, hallowed silence as Donna contemplates the majesty of the birthing Earth. Of Earth-birth.
Earth-birth. So now we get to see what's actually at the core of the Earth. And to me, this is super gross.
Really?
Is it their planet or is it their spaceship? It's their planet, right?
The Arachnos? Yeah. No, it's just a spaceship, I think.
Is it their spaceship?
It's another star job.
Yeah.
So their spaceship existed before there was even, like...
matter?
Yeah. Like, there's just bits and shit.
Just before there was a solar system. I mean, the solar system only forms 9.2 billion years into the universe.
Oh, I suppose
existence.
Maybe they come from a different solar system, different part of the universe. They've existed for tons of time.
They're from the Dark Ages, from Huon particle times.
Okay, fair enough. I take it back. Totally right. But... it's really gross because it turns out our planet is actually just a bunch of dirt wrapped around their spaceship. Like, wrapped around a spider nest.
Mm.
Yeah.
Gross.
I thought that was a good idea, though. I thought that was a really excellent sci-fi device.
Yeah. Totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. Let's put a pin in the fact that Donna has seen this happen with her own two eyeballs.
Okay.
This is where we get the human race.
Oh, yeah.
So lovely and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, giving Dropping meaning that. To everything. Observing.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Okay.
So, yeah, Lance is being waterboarded.
Yeah, exactly my line. Yeah, being waterboarded with Huon particles, because apparently this is all it takes, right? Like, 6 months' worth of Huon particles in a human host. That is all it takes.
But they said it takes over 6 months.
But that's not the case.
Why did they just waterboard Donna?
For 5 minutes and then throw her down this hole, which is exactly what they plan to do with him.
It's not for the same purpose, though. You probably need more Huon particles to restart the spaceship, but you don't need as many to attract via Huon particles.
To wake them up or something.
The person who's 4.6 billion years in the past. So why isn't that picking up Huon particles back from the Dark Ages when they were fucking everywhere?
Bingo.
Just flooding the... why aren't the Arachnos going crazy with those? Damn it.
Maybe because they weren't close enough to the core of the Earth.
Maybe.
So
maybe.
They had to... okay.
Spatial proximity, but not temporal.
Regardless, now that they do have this massive hole... and they have the means to just waterboard someone with Huon particles and then chuck them down this hole...
yep.
Why don't they just do that? They can worry about rebooting the spaceship later on.
Why not just throw the water cooler down there?
Oh! Oh, actually, no, because it had to react with them living. Yeah.
But
fine. Like, just do that. Put Donna in there or, like, even Lance, because she doesn't give a shit about
also,
Lance. Just do that.
Why don't do it with, like, a cow?
Yeah, and why not send it down there in some sort of speedy vehicle? Like a hot rod.
Cow. I completely missed that, and I was about to say, like, yeah, like a cow Lamborghini.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, the Doc breaks out his mallet again.
Yep.
He's about to land in just the wrong place, but it goes boing, and they land in the tunnel, fortunately.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Rather than just surrounded by Earth.
She gets kidnapped all of a sudden because he's trying desperately to get through a door, which it then turns out he just has to turn the wheel and go through, whatever.
Yeah.
He's using his stethoscope. He's being a doctor, you see.
Oh, I see.
He had an ophthalmoscope earlier.
You're right. Anyway, she gets kidnapped and she's now suspended from the ceiling alongside her would-be husband.
Mm.
And I think possibly at this point we get her asking what's down there. Like, what's down that hole? She literally just went back in time and saw what's down that hole.
Ooh.
That's the reason they went back in time, to see what's down that hole. Now she has no recollection.
That's awkward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Also, I don't know when this is exactly, but I've written boob shot.
Yeah, the boobs really start to ramp up towards the end of this episode.
Yeah, there's something about climbing up a ladder or something.
Yeah, soaked with water.
Well, there we go. That's what it is.
Oof.
Anyway, so boob shot. When do we get a tank?
Right at the end.
Okay, right. Yeah. Go for it.
At this point, the particles are shooting down the tunnel, and you start to hear some sort of spidery rustling down there.
Ooh.
And one of the characters has to die, and it's Lance, because the Empress has some sister solidarity. And he's like, Lance, you are actually a massive shitty groom. Yeah. This is going to teach you a lesson as you plummet to your death. Gape, 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 hiss, hiss, hiss.
And the Doctor then reveals...
who he is.
Exactly. Well, he's dressed as a Roboform for no real reason. Like, maybe it was a failed attempt at infiltrating the room or whatever, but he unveils himself.
This, again, was another bit of convention undercutting. I expected him to get to the top of the stairs and to move unseen by everyone. It's like, you're another robot, but the Empress is like, come off it.
Yeah, I see exactly who you are. Yeah, I like that. That's a good observation, yeah. I hadn't considered that. But anyway, so now he shows that he has all these baubles from the party, these exploding baubles.
No, he doesn't do that yet. I think he has a little chat first, and the little chat is about who he is and where he's from.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Mm. Mentions that he's from Gallifrey.
It's like, I'm not a Martian. My world is in Gallifrey.
You're right.
You people killed my people. Again, it's like, have you just been wandering around the universe committing genocide?
I suppose, yeah.
Evidently. Constantly. And, at this point also, he frees Donna from the web. How?
With a...
Nick?
Our next screwdriver. So that's what, number seven?
Number seven!
Damn.
Wow.
Damn.
This is sonicked up to the hilt.
Yeah.
Does it work on webbing?
Apparently.
Okay, so...
he's going to need to replace the batteries in that thing for next week's episode, seriously.
Okay, so where are we with this? Then he's revealed himself, and now he's got the remote control, and there are baubles, and he's going to murder everyone.
Yeah, and he starts doing just that. But when does the star descend to laser people?
After.
Oh, as
after,
revenge.
As revenge.
I see.
Yeah, we'll get there, man.
Initially.
Sorry, man.
So basically, he uses the baubles to bring down the barrier, and the Thames starts flooding in, and then down the hole.
Yeah.
Was essentially a giant bath plug.
I was thinking just that. I could see the water just circling in.
Yeah.
I was thinking, if this hole were drilled from the other side of the earth, the water would be flowing the other way around. But,
So you're killing the spiders down the bath plug. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's another point two for me. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So essentially, the interesting thing about that is the Doctor's maniacal look and or unrelenting. You hear a lot of essential screaming babies. That's what it sounds like, doesn't it? Screaming children, like.
Do we actually get to hear them?
Yes.
Yeah. Seriously.
And Donna's, like, pleading to him to stop. Like, oh, that's enough, man. Not, like, stopping now would do anything, but allow them to continue to die.
I guess maybe stop enjoying it so much.
Yeah.
He's already dead.
This will go down in lore as the fall of Rachnosia and be mentioned every week in Rachnos Who. But no, it's pretty badass. I mean, we've talked about how Eccleston is much more intense and badass than Tennant usually. But here he is framed by flood and flame, and he is just taking all of it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't mention really why the Arachnos or Arachnids or whatever were murdered in the first place. Like, you know, why genocide was committed by the Time Lords.
Because they were omnivores. They ate entire planets.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's just their evolutionary bag. Like, does that mean that they deserve to... It's not like the Daleks that are going around trying to exterminate everything. They were just... That's what they do. Like,
they were born starving. Is that such a crime?
Okay, anyway.
But also, they thrived on the Huon energy, right? And because Huon energy was lethal to lots of people and the Gallifreyans shut that shit down, that then consequently led the Arachnids, I guess, to just go into hibernation or something?
I don't know. I think there's just this Empress and then this bunch of ones in the Earth, so I don't know.
Who've been down there for billions of years. Yeah. All right, fine. Whatever.
Tanks!
Tanks, finally! So we get the super Christmassy moment. All the families are outside. They're looking at this giant star descending onto the Earth. No reason to panic, guys. Anyway, it's
probably just
fire.
The mayor's put on a good show.
Oh, I suppose,
year.
Yeah.
At and this point, it was Livingston, so no. This is not really a political joke. I would have made that joke for any mayor.
Oh. Anyway, it opens fire, and in retaliation, we get one tank? Several tanks?
One tank that we can see.
Okay.
But then loads of terribly aimed tanks, or at least artillery shells, go up. And the first, like, 50 or so miss.
And they land somewhere. They land somewhere.
In metropolitan London.
Yeah.
I say, oh my God, I really hope this is not how we get down. We've got guidance systems and shit, and it's only up, like, I feel like we'd nail that.
Yeah.
First time.
Apparently not. Anyway, it does crash, but is it... The tank receives orders from Mr. Saxon.
Mr. Saxon. Which, again, it's not really something our prime ministers do.
No. Like, hey, tank guy, order you.
Tank guy number one.
I don't know, Cameron will be claiming the credit for every Syrian airstrike from next week, aren't he?
Anyway.
So yeah, the Thames is drained. That's funny.
Oh yeah, that. It's like, oh, we're doing the Thames, ha ha ha. It's like, wait on, lots of shit is in the, like, the fishes and seals and shit.
And wrecks.
And yeah, and also boats.
Water flows into the Thames from somewhere, right?
And yeah. Yes, flows from upstream.
Somewhere else, right? So what happened to that? And also...
It's tidal at this point. Water would be cascading in from both directions.
Yeah, massive fucking tsunami is about to hit London. And also, is it okay for the centre of the Earth to be flooded with water? Like, to be suddenly and very rapidly cooled down?
It would quite clearly, with the amount of the heat in the middle of the Earth, with the amount, the small amount of water, comparatively, that's in
should
terms,
just, like, steam,
it would just steam out before it got to even the first part of the mantle.
But with the geothermal force of 1,000 megaton nuclear bomb. So goodbye, London. Thanks, RTD.
Yeah, terrible science.
That's pretty much the end of the episode.
Yes.
We're now back in the TARDIS. We're going back to Chiswick so that Donna Noble can hang out with her fam and...
That's it, and have Christmas dinner.
Yeah, pretty much. There's a moment where the doctor even goes, hey, you know what? You don't have to go back to your shitty family. If you like, you can just stick with me and I'll bone you in the TARDIS and we'll travel around and see space.
And she says no.
Yeah.
Which is lovely, because that doesn't usually happen to him. And
true.
She invites him in for Christmas dinner, but he does...
Really? He says yes, I'll be right there.
Yeah.
Right straight up.
He's doing this is yeah, he does the shitty goodbye at a party when you don't say goodbye, you know. He says, oh yeah, I'll totally be over there, and then you just leave.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Not cool, man. But then they say goodbyes. But I think I hadn't realised at this point, but it seems that it's quite clear that she's going to come back as a future companion. I think reading back, listening to the dialogue back, it seems fairly clear to me now. But I think at the time I was like, oh, bit part, you know.
Possibly.
Like Kylie. And then moving on.
I don't know. I mean, I don't remember what I thought in 2006. But now, like, I can't get away from the fact that I know that she's coming back.
Mm.
I think this would have totally worked as a standalone companion. Yeah. And I think it's very, very right that she doesn't join him immediately. Because we just had, like, a massive farewell one episode ago.
Mm. Yeah.
That's been referenced a number of times in this episode.
And it also gets him in a position where he can say the least convincing, I don't need anyone.
Ever.
I really like his acting in this scene, in that he is trying to repress this, but is doing so incredibly badly, because it's much more traumatising than he wants to let on.
I thought he did a fantastic job in this scene, especially his very last line as well, when she asked him, like, oh, what was her name, the girl that you lost, and he's so close to tears when he goes, oh, it was Rose. Close the door, away we go.
Yeah.
Very well acted, I thought.
Okay.
And the TARDIS shoots into the sky.
What was that? The shooting into the sky to make it snow?
Did that
ever happen?
Oh, yeah, yeah, wait, hang on. There were two things. One, the exit is, as you said, like, it doesn't dematerialize. It shoots up like a rocket, which is super weird.
Yeah.
But before that, he presses a button, like he has a remote.
Yeah, he presses it, like, just above the door.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then there's something, some sort of atmospheric...
Snow bomb?
...science torpedo.
Atmospheric excitation.
Tickling nature's balls.
And immediately it starts snowing, at which point, by the way, Miriam Moore last night said, quote, oh, delaying every flight from Heathrow.
Don't drain the Thames. Fuck up Heathrow. Good.
But it doesn't even stop being shit then, because it's very clearly a snowblower just off the left of shit.
Yeah.
So obviously.
Yeah.
Anyway, end of episode. And we don't get a next time on Doctor Who, we get a next season on Doctor Who.
Yes, as in here is the next season.
Yeah, I did think there was quite a lot of info in there, wasn't there?
Yeah, fairly spoilerific in a way, but good.
Hmm.
Quite promising. Even though, weirdly, this is really just an episode and a half ago, whatever, two episodes ago, that we saw... What's her face? Yeah.
Be more specific.
Freema.
Oh, Martha, not Martha.
Exactly.
Yeah, Martha, not Martha. No, Freema is her name, isn't it?
Yeah, the actress.
But I don't know what the character
is. Oh, the character, I have no idea. But yeah. Anyway, so that actress, we saw her an episode and a half ago, and now, next season on Doctor Who, there she is playing someone else.
Also, they have quite a gratuitous shot of a Dalek, and I can't remember any Freema Eggman Dalek encounters.
No?
Can you?
Is it the Daleks in Manhattan in this series?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Yeah, good point. Fair play. All right, okay, episode over.
End of episode. Who wants to start the reviews?
Reviews. Reviews.
Really need to re-record those, man.
Okay, I'll go first, I think. Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of Donna Noble, but more of where she's going than this particular episode.
Mm-hmm.
It was good that it was a complete departure from the sort of, like I said, saccharine romance of Rose immediately, because I needed to shake that off a little bit. I needed to get back into the swing of things. I didn't like the villain particularly, but I quite liked the sci-fi version of this was a plan set in motion billions of years ago. That was cool. The Tennant was actually all right. Okay. For my score, though, and I'm going to give it a little bit leeway because it's a Christmas episode. I don't think I'd be quite so high if this was a normal episode. I'm going to go for 2.5.
Okay. I'm going to go before Leon so I can get hoisted on a petard. Hoisted on his petard, specifically. I'm going to say, I had a hard time making notes on much of this episode, which I thought was a good sign, because there's not one line that can dismiss certain scenes as just irredeemably shit. There's complexity there, and I thought there was great range shown by Catherine Tate. She relied heavily on her then trademark bolshy established by her sketch show, yes, but she was sad, she was concerned, she was very human as a foil for the Doctor. For a first appearance, I thought she covered a hell of a lot of ground, potentially an only appearance. I thought she did a good job. I thought the Empress of the Rachnos was hammy. I thought she was impressive. I thought that visually she was the most impressive villain I'd seen in Doctor Who to that point. I don't know how the Macra Terror stands up in terms of giant spacecrafts.
Oh, Jesus Christ, no.
The overuse of the Sonic was abysmal. Our last count was 7. Tennant looked more badass than he had for ages. I did hate the music. But overall, I really liked it. It got better as it went along, which is always important and is always the right direction. So I'm going to give it a 4.1.
Wow. Whoa. Holy smokes.
It really is Christmas, isn't it? Fuck about.
Wow. Okay. How do I follow on from that? Okay. I'm not going quite that high, but I'm also not going quite that low. I think, actually, to address the alien first, I agree with you. Super impressive costume for two reasons. One, that like the massive body that like just animatronics, I suppose, or maybe it was just a huge model and they cut out people moving the legs around or something. Very impressive stuff. And the second thing being the eyes all blinking in sync, which must have been CGI'd afterwards, but regardless, very, very well done. However, the rest of that character, fuck me, how annoying was she? All those and tilting her head, the weird head oscillations, all the, like... Also, like, how did her species ever do anything advanced? They don't have fingers, they don't have thumbs, they don't have nothing. They have, like, pointy shit. They have spears for phalanges. How can they build anything? Anyway.
The Daleks rebuilt Skaro with plungers.
Okay, fair points. All right, anyway. Actually, the Daleks were something else beforehand, weren't they? And then through nuclear fallout, they turned into tonsils.
Oh, okay. I meant in the first episode of the new series, they rebuilt Skaro.
Oh, you're right. Fine. Okay.
Moving on.
Fair point. Yeah, moving on. I like the sci-fi backstory of there's something, like we get to see the start of the Earth, even though it massively grosses me out. It's like, I don't know, weirdly somehow you all of a sudden found out that you had sex with your aunt or something because there's like a weird spider cobweb thing in the middle of the Earth. Gross.
Those two things are equivalent.
Totally. And I kind of like the Huon particle subplot. It's very silly and whatever, but because this is a Christmas episode, as you said, I'm prepared to be more lenient. However, I am marking this down for massive amounts of collateral damage that is never addressed. I would be happy for that to be addressed, as in I'm happy for that to be a part of the episode if they address it, if they go like, holy shit, this was a traumatic incident for London. Like, huge traffic incident, and then we accidentally shot missiles at ourselves. Terrible. Definitely rating this down for... I'm rating this down for Catherine Tate, largely. I think she's super annoying in this one. I'm looking forward to her being better in coming episodes, but in this one, holy shit, is she annoying. She's only ever good when she's sad, and I don't want... Like, you can't build a character around someone. She can't be sad all the time, is what I'm trying to say. So, no. Hate her. Hate all that. For that reason, I'm giving this a 3.1.
Nice.
Cool. Merry Christmas, everyone.
What a range. Okay.
Okie dokie. Before we run into our closing, let's jerk ourselves off a little bit statements. Here's a word from Future Punkin' about our next very, very special episode. Take it away, Future Punkin'!
What ho, podcast land, Future Punkin' here. Right, so you may already know about this from my interruption in our last couple of episodes, or if you've seen the note about this on our Facebook page, facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. But our 100th episode is super duper close now. We are talking vinegar strokes. In fact, the next time my fellow co-hosts and I sit down to record, that's what we'll be recording. And to commemorate the occasion, we're going to do sort of a talk show-esque behind-the-scenes shtick, and we'll be dropping both a regular audio podcast and, wait for it, an extended video version. So you'll get to put some pretty goddamn handsome faces to our velvet baritones, though I say so myself. Pretty cool, right? Well, I think so anyway. So this is really just to say, please do tune into that, because if all goes according to plan, we'll have assembled everyone who's ever co-hosted Who Back When. We're talking Flapjack, JD, the Rawmeister, Nicolele, the Druid, and me, of course. Hi, I'm Ponkin. You don't want to miss it. Okay, that's enough of an interruption for now. Pip, pip, back to the show.
Thank you very much, Future Me.
Okie dokie. Shit, that's important.
That was pretty important, right? Oh, wow, I've got goosebumps. Thank you very much for listening to our review. Hope you enjoy the show. And boy, oh boy, do we have some awesome reviews coming up.
Hot damn. The next new Who will be Smith and Jones.
Holy crap, yes it will. Our next classic will be Evil of the Daleks.
And that leaves me with the next audiobook review.
Which is going to be
Baron Dawn.
Is it good?
I've heard bad things. Can't say it fills me with confidence.
But let's confirm that by putting it down in a podcast.
Indeed. Also, when we return, after said bonus episode, when we return, we will also be joined by JD, which is
ooh,
pretty awesome.
Yes.
For New Who's anyway, and for Audio Who. In the meantime, why don't you good people of podcast land stalk us on the interwebs? Starting on the far right, Nicolele, you are at...
Nicolele.
Which is...
Nikulele.
I.e. almost like ukulele, but with
no. No.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And then to my left.
I'm going to do this Bon Jovi style.
I am found a Who Back When, because it sounds like Who Back When. That was awesome. Why are we not recording the video? Why are we not recording video? That was amazing. And I am Ponkin. Please feel free to follow me on Twitter. Say hello. I promise to say hi back. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spelled that.
P-O-N-K-E-N. Ponkin.
Thanks, JD. Catch you in the next one. Rock on. Be rad to each other. And cha-chow.
Bye.
Ka-chow.
Bye-bye.
Kablamo. Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account. No lie. So give us a follow. You guessed it. That's @WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Cha-chow.
Who Back When?